I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Nuts go bad, nuts go bad, nuts go bad if you leave them in your closet. Nuts go bad, nuts go bad, nuts go bad if you leave them in your closet. Yeah.
Hello and welcome to Two in the Think Tank, the show where we come up with five sketch ideas. I'm Andy. You know?
And I'm Alistair George William Trombley Birchall.
And I love that.
And nuts go bad if you leave them in the closet.
But I don't think nuts go bad in the absent, like in a vacuum, you know.
I didn't say if you leave them in the vacuum.
But I don't think it's, I don't think it's the closet per se that's causing the nuts to go bad. I think there are environmental conditions associated with that, you know, that storage instance. But not, and also not every closet is going to be the same. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know, so I think every closet.
Andy, I think if you leave nuts in any closet, no matter the closet, they will go bad.
I mean, okay. You said
a vacuum.
You know,
Andy, you said a vacuum.
Yes.
You said a vacuum. Nobody's closet is a vacuum. I bet you there is not one completely depressurized closet in the whole world.
But, you know, people do put those clothes in those vacuum packs, you know, if you've got those clothes for deep storage, you know, and put them in that thing and you suck all the air out, and that's got to be closed.
And if you go into the closet where people have all those vacuum packs, right, and you see them stacked on this shelf in the closet, and you put a bag of nuts on top of that, those vacuum things, right?
Gonna go bad.
That pack of nuts there, they're gonna go bad because they're in a closet.
Alistair, is there? You know how, like in Canada or something like that. I don't know if you know or you're aware of this country, but they
Canada.
Am I right in thinking that, like, during winter, maybe in slightly ye oldier times, but you might leave some things out overnight in the cold, you know, in lieu of refrigerating them. You know, you might, you know, put all your milk into a plastic bag on the end of a piece of string and dangle it out the window and then just haul it in the morning and scoop it out of the bag with your bare hands and have some
frozen hard milk.
Yes. Yes. That's what I have for ice cream. And I love it. But.
Yeah, just a bag.
Do you think that in space, at the International Space Station, they do a similar thing? You know, they'll just keep some food just out the window on a bit of string. Like, not everything needs to be stored in an oxygenated environment. In fact, I dare say that a lot of things would do better outside the International Space Station. You know, you can actually, in a zero gravity environment, you can take up as much stuff as you want and then just chuck it out the window and just reel it in. You know, you could have an extra wardrobe out there.
That's true. I mean, I guess as long as you bring lots of twine, you know, lots of twine up, and then you can have all this storage space.
All the storage space.
It's essentially like a big clothes horse, isn't it?
In a way, yes. Every direction is a clothes horse. But could you dry clothes? I think you could, right? If you wash your clothes on I imagine, one of those big washboard things that they have up there to save electricity. You're doing like an old washerwoman. And then to dry them, could you put them out in the vacuum of space, and then the vacuum
but think about this: every time you do that, you're taking a little bit of the precious water that you have on board And then you're putting it out and just letting it go free.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And that must feel really good.
Every load of washing, oh, it would feel very wasteful, wouldn't it? But you'll be like, Elon is going to send another 4-liter cask of water.
But it's so decadent, you know, like being able to waste those precious resources like that. You know, sometimes when you're sick of saving money and you just want to spend a bunch, you know, just because, just do it. And you'd be the same in the International Space Station with your precious life-giving resources like oxygen. Or water. You just
bet
vent
you on the International Space Station. I bet you they do just go on shopping sprees because they're on the internet.
Yeah.
So they probably just are like, I'm just going to buy some records, or I'm going to have a couple of DVDs sent to my house so that when I get home, I can watch them.
But
I'm going to buy a grand piano. I wonder what the biggest thing they bought has been bought from the thing. Anyway, wait, let's go back to what you were talking about, because that feels like it's closer to a reference, like a sketch or something. You know, it'd be really great, because you know how like they brush their teeth, they just put a bit of toothpaste on there, they squirt a little mini bubble of water onto the toothbrush, you know, and then they brush their teeth and then they swallow everything and then they suck everything out of their toothbrush like you do.
Is that what they do?
Yeah, and they swallow everything.
They swallow everything and then it goes down, you know, and they dispose of it through the butt. Then it gets sucked out through the butt. They're kind of using
but it gets turned into a more solid.
The body as a kind of a waste processing facility, right? They're taking advantage of that, the fact that the body stores and processes waste. Like, you know, there might be other things that like... Oh, part of our policy up there is also, like, if you're working with little screws, tiny little screws, it's dangerous for those to go, to get floating around. They could get into the electronics.
Swallow them.
You just swallow them, and then you poop them out, and they're dealt with that way.
Well, that's why they get sent up with poopable screws. These are screws that...
poopable screws that...
can be digested. They can be digested by the human body.
And it's only a matter of time before that turns up in our day-to-day lives. You know, I heard, and this is, you know, this doesn't sound great, Alistair, but actually they've taken that that whole process to the next level, which is that it turns out it's easier for the purposes of managing everything if they're all the astronauts then poop into one astronaut's mouth, and then they just, you know, and then that poop goes through his system, and then there's only really one set of poop. They consolidate all the poop into one easy to manage.
And it's the one with the smallest butt. Because it's the one who can get closest to the little hole in the wall that they've created.
Yeah, yeah.
And they can poop directly out. It's like the one with the most accurate hole-to-hole shot. You know, like, this is the guy who gets bullseye every time. Or gal. You know, I apologize.
So this is
but they
like one of those astronaut videos, right, where people and kids send in questions to ask astronauts how they do different things in space. And it turns out that all the way they do almost everything is by shitting into somebody's mouth. Is that a sketch? Is that what where we've got to?
Andy, we're starting strong.
astronaut, you know, Chris Evans, the
mustachioed,
he answers David Bowie all your enthusiast space questions, and you're not gonna like it. You're not gonna like it, but you got to make sacrifices to do it in space. I wonder if anybody has ever done what's the weirdest sex act that's ever been done in space? That's all I want to know.
I think I like the idea that that in The Simpsons there was that thing where an ant farm broke.
So good, great episode.
Yeah. But I would love to see an astronaut be like, look, the only way we can deal with this, and you got to go around, you got to go like that and try and suck up the ants.
Yeah.
And go, just get your mouth right up against like the, you know, like, I guess I'm kind of picturing like in an airplane, you know, like there's the part up the top above your head with the light and and it's called kind of like little plastic fixtures, but there's like, they're all compartmentalized and you can, but there's little gaps in between them, and that maybe you would have to like put your mouth up against the gap and just suck and hope that you know, your suction is stronger than the grip an ant has on the, on the, so the plastic molding.
And you can't count on that. I think a lot of, you know, astronauts, when they come back to Earth, they lose a lot of muscle tone and that sort of thing, and they have to relearn how to do different things. I suspect...
But their rectum comes back, like, muscly.
I was wondering about whether or not one of the things that they lose is the ability to shit into a non-suction toilet. Like a toilet that, that just sits there and doesn't meet you halfway, doesn't do any of the work.
Maybe...
It's, you know...
Maybe they have to do... They just have to, like, poop into a tissue in their hand. Mm. And just sort of like wrap it up like a burrito and then just put it into a tube, like just slide it into a tube like a...
Like a little mummified corpse and then blast it out into space.
Like it's
a little salute.
Like it's Tutankhamun and you're sending him up to HR for them to count all his money. No, that doesn't make sense, but I was mixing two ideas. Those vacuum tubes where you send money through or messages.
Yeah, okay, cool.
And Tutankhamun.
Has anybody looked into this? I'm sorry, there's a lot of poo stuff very early on the podcast. But, you know, there seems to be, it's not a problem I have personally, I'm doing fine, but it seems to be a big market out there for people who have trouble on the bathroom, making everything happen. Has anybody looked at using negative pressure and getting a good bum seal and having a toilet that does actually gives you a little bit of help with a bit of suction?
Because people have strokes because they push.
Right.
So the solution to that is that you want to have some pull.
The toilet that meets you halfway with a little bit of pull. Does some of the work.
A halfway toilet. It's a halfway toilet. Mm. And it's one where you don't push, but it's also for when you're down on your luck.
Like a halfway house? Is that what that reference is?
Yeah, which I guess if you can't get it out without pushing hard, you probably are down on your luck.
Down on your luck. I mean, luck takes all forms.
What's a lot of luck? What's a lot of luck? No effort poop.
You know, it's a very narrow view of luck to think that it only takes financial forms when it can.
What?
Yeah. What?
I mean, I my one example was pooping.
I know. I'm not correcting you. I'm talking about everybody else who uses the term down on their luck to exclusively refer... Alistair, that wasn't an attack. Believe me, when
it's
I come for you, you'll
let's
know.
Let's turn it into one.
You'll know.
When I come for you, you'll feel it. You'll lie awake trying to think of comebacks, but you won't find one. Every one of my lines is a checkmate.
Mm-hmm. It is an insult to which there is no comeback. Is that what we're suggesting?
That's right.
That's pretty good. Like even
is that an idea?
Even the what am I doesn't work on it. It's a comeback that
I know you are, but what am I? And then the reason why it doesn't work on it because it's not something that you are.
Mm, really good.
That's why. Yeah. I mean, it's got to be a pretty good line that has no comeback.
Well, I think that this
you
is...
You can't even
this
use.
This will be something we can solve with quantum computers. You know, like how the AlphaGo can play Go in a way that no one had thought to play Go before. When we have really, you know, we reach the singularity. The thing that is going to kick robots over the edge and make them so damaging to us, it's not going to be their ability with guns and that sort of thing. It's going to be their way with words. Their ability to just cut us down and go to the very core of us, metaphorically speaking, with the insults, the put-downs.
Yes. But then also, you know, literally speaking, and their ability
cut
to
us down
sort of slice
and go
through
to the
our
core
soft
of us.
Flesh. Yeah, and sort of get into where our organs are and cut those up as well.
Yes, yes, but... But also, they'll make us feel bad about ourselves, and arguably, that is a greater death than the one
That's
where
true.
Your internal organs have been chopped up into little pieces.
The only thing that will alleviate that death is the regular death from being chopped
up. Well, you'll welcome it. You'll welcome the internal whizzing. You know, there would be this would be a great thing in like a crime show. Right, where they get this body in and it looks perfectly healthy on the outside. But then they do the autopsy and they cut it open. Then everything inside has just been fully blended just to mush. So they slice it and it just oozes.
And it's in
out.
A bag? It's like in a like a sandwich bag or everything is just mush?
I think it's just mush. Like the body is the sandwich bag. And okay. Every single organ, internal organ, has just been processed to a uniform, goop, frappe kind of smoothie sludge. Type sludge. Yeah.
Oh, sort of like a pate.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you say pate?
And I, want to know how this occurred. I suspect it's done with like nanobots or something like that. But if, you swallow some sort of tiny thing. That's made out of ice. Mm. It's a robot that's made out of ice, right? You swallow it. It's got a motor in there, made out of ice, also ice, right?
It's made out of, what's that other ice that's black ice? No, not black ice. That's the one that you slide on the road. The one that's made out of carbon dioxide.
Yeah, dry ice.
So it's even colder.
Made of dry ice.
Dry ice.
But it can conduct electricity.
Your machinery could last for longer.
Yes, right? And it just whirls just to blend around in there, blends you all up. And then melts.
While this weird steam comes out of your mouth.
There are no, nobody's combining, nobody's doing like a CSI, but set in the future. Mm-hmm. Bones did it a little bit with their stupid hologram computer that was just ludicrous. But.
Oh, yeah. I like this, Andy. Future.
Future CSI.
This is great, Andy. Future CSI. Because this is the way. That we could get a lot of just outlandish sci-fi ideas and then just a regular comforting cop.
Yeah, procedural.
Procedural.
And
where you know it's going to be solved by the end. It's all going to be done.
I think this is really something, Alistair. Because you know how I know it's something? Because I've already worked out what the genre is going to be called.
What is it?
CSI-fi.
Oh.
Or. CSI-fi.
Wait. No. If it's CSI-fi, but then it's still just CSCIFI.
CSCSCI? What?
CSCIFI.
Right, yeah. CSCIFI. Yeah, I felt really confident that I knew what it was when I started my sentence.
Oh, no, I guess it could just be CSIFI, but then it kind of looks like,
genre that I thought it was. I mean,
we can work out how to write it. We just get a graphic designer to communicate it. Correctly.
Now
through big and small letters.
I mean, a lot of listeners are probably screaming at their gramophones that they listen to this on. That there are obvious examples of shows that are exactly this, and I apologize.
Yeah.
But
you're right. Wait.
You know what I like about this is that. Nobody's ever going to be able to guess the twist because we'll always have the twist be some as yet undiscovered technology. So it'll be that really satisfying.
Or the murderer will be a character that wasn't introduced.
That's the true twist. That's the true innovation in these in storytelling. That somebody's got to find a way to do that and still make it narratively satisfying. That's splitting the atom. You know?
Andy, turns out that there's a sort of an investing indice called CSI 300 Futures.
Mm.
And that feels like that could be the name of this show, but it's already taken as an investing indice.
I still don't quite understand what you're saying with this thing, but...
Well, this could be the name of the show, CSI 300 Futures.
Yeah. Okay. Is that already a thing?
But it's already taken. I'm sorry.
I'm confused.
This name that you're not in any way convinced by for our show that we've just come up with. I'm sorry, Andy, but it's taken.
That's a shame. Anyway, one of the first ones is somebody's internal organs are going to have been completely frappéed by a robot made from dry ice.
Yeah, that's great.
I feel like some of the bullshit in some of those Dan Browns, like the Angels and Demons, if you ever read that, like that's coming close to this kind of territory. He's not trying to, he's not going all the way, but there is a real clunky approximation to what we're going to pull off with this brilliance.
Andy, we could go pitch this tomorrow and we would be millionaires by tomorrow. Instead of early, like sort of, I guess, about 11:30.
Sorry, I'm busy tomorrow.
Depending on when the meeting is, what time the meeting is, we wouldn't be rich before the meeting. That's not what I'm saying. No. I'm saying, let's say if the meeting was at sort of 10:50.
Yeah, in the morning.
Then I reckon by in the morning, yeah, not PM. That's a crazy time to book a meeting. But I guess you would be more free.
But then. Also, maybe it's a meeting with Netflix. Maybe that's just 10:50 our time.
Well, that's right. They don't have regular schedules like the TV. Yeah, you're right. So, but I reckon if it was 10:50, then we would be at least rich minimum by 11:05.
Alistair, you know what's going to happen if I get rich? I'm going to buy a lot of really, really old, decrepit buildings.
You know what I think that you would actually do? You'd get really into smoking foods with very obscure types of wood.
Look, it's very likely.
You're like, look at this. I got this smoking thing, and I got these hickory twigs.
But I'm more convinced that I'm going to get into bad metalwork sculpture. You know, I'm going to be welding old bits of machinery together.
We know you're going to get into bad metalwork injuries. We're just like, you know, you're just, yeah, you're trying to take like an old, coffee machine boiler and you're trying to solder it
on to
like
an old
tractor. How
did you know that I was looking at old coffee machine boilers on Facebook Marketplace yesterday?
Of course you are. You're looking for things that can end it all. Things with just one weakness and just, 100 PSI of pressure.
It turns out that being this enthusiastic about metalwork with this low a level of skill in metalwork is classified as a mental illness in the Dictionary of Clinical Psychology. And I'm technically, the more I do it, the more I am attempting suicide. A part of my brain is actually trying to kill me without letting the rest of my brain know.
I'm trying to help you.
I wonder.
Absolutely, Andy.
I wonder. Like, okay, is this too grim, Alistair? But like, what if somebody attempts suicide, okay, and they fail, and then we're at the point in the future.
Does failing mean not
they
killing
don't
themselves?
Kill themselves, or? No. But we're at the point in the future where we've identified the functional role of all the different parts of the brain and the components of the consciousness. And we find the part of the brain that was responsible for trying to kill them. Because when you do something like that, it's not the whole brain that's doing it. You know, certainly the your reptilian brain that's responsible for controlling your breathing and that sort of thing, that's not doing it, right? So we might be able to, using scans and using
I see where stuff. You're going with this. And then you go, you find the part that was responsible, and then you go and dig up the body of that person, and you cut out that little piece.
Yeah.
And you put it in jail.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in my version, remember, they weren't successful in killing themselves, so they're still alive. So, I mean, in my version,
know,
it was going to be put
they
on
died
trial.
Later of natural causes.
They then went on to die of natural causes. So this is a cold case. But do you think there's something here that you could...
I think so. I think, part of the brain.
And even... It doesn't have to be suicide, does it? Of course. Because any crime was not committed by the entire human or even by their entire mind, but only a small, defective, criminal part of the mind. Mm-hmm. You know that movie, that TV show, Criminal Minds? Well, this is a TV mm-hmm. show called Criminal Bits of Minds.
And of minds, they, yeah. They accept that the
once you've
that conscious agents in the mind can combine to create one large consciousness.
Gestalt consciousness, indeed. And, you know, yes. It's one thing to catch the body containing the brain that committed the crime, but then to catch the little bit inside the brain and chop it out with a knife and put it in little shackles and lie it on a witness stand bench, oozing and dripping, and question it.
You know it's capable of thinking, and criminal intent.
And then it goes into...
Well, I was wondering, this is where my thought went when you first started it, and I think that they're both very separate ideas. So I would, I'll see how you feel about this, but we discover that people who had somebody's killed themselves or whatever, but we discover that there's much in the way that frogs, when there's no males or females around, they can swap sexes. Right? They can turn into the other sex.
Yes. Yes.
Turns out that we discover that there's a place you go when you die. And the reason why people were ending their lives was because their brain was alerted by the sort of the societal hive mind from both sides of the existence, both the world side and the great beyond. Yes. That there's a call saying we need soldiers, or we need people to have sex with us, or whatever it is. And so then that's what people to make people do that, it has to make them sad. But once they get on the other side, it's actually a really great time.
And then
they got a purpose. And stuff.
What you've got here, Alistair, is you've got you don't just have a sketch idea. You've got yourself a religion. You've got yourself the basis of an entire cult right there.
So I guess I can't write it down, can I? Because it's a cult rather than a sketch idea.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I wish you could, but I mean, I think that's very good. You know, I don't know much about this weird sex cult Nexium thing or whatever it was called.
Yeah.
That they've recently had going in the United States, but that sounds right, like exactly right what they'd say, and this is 100% what is at the heart of Scientology. It's all this crap that works so well. You're not dying. You're being called to the front lines in some sort of battle for the other side. How do we make it as funny as possible, Alistair?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it could. I guess the task that you're being called to could be itself a funny thing. Or a,
yeah. I mean, it's it is.
I mean, because I guess the idea could be that you find out what the purpose of humanity is, that we are a farm for some otherworldly thing.
Oh, that is very good.
And sort of dying is us being called upon.
Yeah.
When you get old, you're sort of a wizened, old scholar. And that's what sometimes they need those they need those who've seen a lot of life to, to explain something, to do statistics. But then sometimes they also just need young, strong people.
And sometimes, obviously, for some reason, they need very small children.
They need very small children.
There you go.
But there are purposes for, needing the innocent.
It's actually bringing a lot of comfort. I don't know if that was your intent here, but boy, it's a lot of comfort. But yeah. I think, you could do something where it's like very built up in the first half. You get these voices from the other side, and you get, you get visions or something and you realize that you have this calling wherein you have to die to go to this greater job that is required of you. And it's a huge step, but like you're so inspired by these visitations from what are essentially angels for all intents and purposes. And then you do it and you're dead, and then you get there and the job that they needed you for is like opening a jar or something like that. But the way in which, you know, they're not capable of communicating in a way that is anything less than incredibly inspiring. And so you assume that your calling is going to be something really important, but it's quite mundane.
And then in a very inspiring way, as soon as you've opened the jar, they say, now get into the, you know, get sliced to pieces booth.
Get sliced to pieces.
You know, because they're very wasteful with these, with this resource that they build in this other dimension, which is us.
That's true. Right? Yeah. Like if you,
because they've got billions of us on tap.
Yeah. The way that, like if conscious minds were just a resource that you burned through like disposable coffee cups, it wouldn't mean anything to you if you could make them in a different universe where the physical laws were different and where time has a totally different meaning. You know, from your point of view, these things would arrive instantly when you required them. And of course you would just throw them into the gutter like the trash that they are.
Yeah, or just like let them fall into your fire bin. Mm.
Everybody has a fire
or
bin.
Or magma bin.
An idealistic future, so it makes sense that everyone would have a magma bin. Doesn't get much better than
download
that.
Magma. Download magma from sospresents.com.
I mean,
magma.
Who wouldn't love the idea of being able to throw any object directly into a pit of, you know, a small, handy, open magma pit in your kitchen and maybe one in every room? I mean, yes, you have to deal with the instant stink of whatever it was that you were getting rid of burning. And most things smell terrible when they burn.
Yeah, but maybe if you close it, it's a perfect seal on there.
Oh, that'd be
you
good. Know?
You put it in.
Yeah.
You dunk it in and then you just close it and it's kind of got like a nice little seal on it.
Oh, when you open it, that stink doesn't come back out again?
Well, maybe around the outside of the pipe, there's a little gap. So it's a pipe and then another pipe, I guess, to stop the hot pipe from being in your room. There's a little area in between the two, so it's a pipe in a pipe, and in that area there's air being sucked down
and it vents to,
so that any smells that come down that float up get sucked straight down into the pipe.
I forgot for a second that I was talking to one of the world's premier magma engineers, and but of course you'd have an answer for something like this.
Well, you know, I'm a speed round engineer. You know, I don't like to stick around for the gritty details, but I'll give you a concept.
That's what I want. I want that job. I want to be an engineer in some sort of scenario where the speed with which you come up with the idea is so much more important. It's almost, for all intents and purposes, the only criteria is being able to answer it quickly.
I knew a guy, my friend's long-distance boyfriend, he basically said his job was to come up with ideas for technology, but it was for the military.
I'd almost take it. Like
me too.
I'd feel bad, obviously, being part of the complex, but
it'd be that paycheck, though.
Yeah.
You know, that's...
Yeah. It might be my calling.
It's like we've pre-sold out.
Yeah.
It's good to get out of the way. You know, the struggle, the moral struggle, that's what's draining.
Nobody's buying, right, at this point, as far as I'm aware. But as soon as I get any sniff that anybody is, I want you to know that I'm gone. That I'm I'm a shill. I'm a shill in a shell. And
I'm Michelle.
Yeah. That's right.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Call me Michelle. Hermit crabs, Alistair. Anything in that? Anything in hermit crabs?
Well, they swap shells.
Have we talked about hermit crabs in this show in the past? Like a very obvious
the one where
thing
they, the, that where they all line up.
But that is a very cool thing. I like that a lot. They all move down one shell. But a very obvious thing that I feel like we probably would have talked about is the idea of, you know, you fall asleep on the beach with your mouth open and a hermit crab comes into the cavity in your mouth. And it's, you know, I don't know if they think about the outer dimensions of the space, but the inner dimensions would be very important to them. And that's perfect for them. And they just go in there with their little claws.
I wonder whether they think about the outer dimensions.
I don't know. I don't know that they would.
I think they would absolutely have to. But I think that would be a really big part of it. But well, I'm still okay with going with this
thank
idea.
Thank you, Alistair, and I appreciate you being willing to suspend what I know is a very critical mind that you have.
But Andy, you wake up and you notice that sand is moving past your
exactly,
face.
Exactly, indeed, yes.
And that you can feel it actually rubbing against your face. It's cool, it's moist, you're down by the water.
Yeah, you're being dragged along.
And you look down, you know, down your nose, down towards your nose, and you see some legs coming out of your mouth, pulling you along. In your mouth, you feel, I guess, the kind of
the curled,
the shrimpy curled,
rear
back
bit,
vulnerable back of the hermit crab,
and
in between your teeth. Oh no, but maybe he's broken all your teeth. He's taken your teeth out.
Now, oh, fuck. Okay.
He's done this before.
But this has to be... Now, there needs to be that this hermit crab secretes some kind of neurotoxin that renders you totally numb, right? Mm-hmm. And immobile. So you're conscious, you can still move your eyes, and all your bodily functions continue to keep you alive. But you are now just a vessel. It's turned you into a conscious, but basically locked in. It's only using you for the space in your mouth. That's all you've become, functionally speaking.
And maybe some of the other warmth for maybe having its babies.
So you've become a shell.
Could lay the eggs down your throat.
Shell of a man. A shell of a man.
Oh my God, you become a shell of a man.
Yeah. And
I'm a shell of a man. Well, I do have an uncle, Michel.
There you go.
He was a Michel of a man.
And you're being dragged, I guess, along the bottom of the ocean then, in and out of rock pools.
Well, I think once you go into the ocean, you start being a bit doomed, don't you?
Yeah. I like to think. I mean, there might be an incentive. Are there any reasons, other incentives for this thing to keep you alive, right? Like what does it get out of it?
Well, we start to get into some of the, you know, the trouble is that we start to get into the world of the spider in the mouth.
Yes, no, I realize that we came. I'm trying to keep the stream separated, but like, okay, so there is.
I guess it's bringing you to. It's actually not a hermit crab. It's bringing you to its family. No, that would be too.
So. You know, a lot of creatures aren't warm-blooded, right? But there are benefits from being warm-blooded, right? Of being able to keep a regulated temperature. And you're able to move quicker. You're able to metabolize quicker, that kind of thing. But, you know, what if you could develop some kind of parasitic or symbiotic relationship whereby you, it's harnessing our body warmth, right? So it it needs to keep us alive, so that it can get that warmth and operate at the level at which it's operating.
Well, it could go and live in a colder climate.
It can, yes, great. And with the coming ice age, this is going to be all the more important. So you'll be being dragged along in quite cold environments, but it feeds you. It keeps you alive in some way, chucking back microgranules of organic matter down to the back of your throat.
Would it eat you? Would it go in deep and then eat some little bits and stuff like that? But it kind of, it keeps you alive because you're a continuous source of food.
Right. Yeah, I see that. It would eat the non-essential bits of you.
Mm.
From around the
which evolution
perimeter.
Has taught its mind over time.
Yeah.
It's hardwired into their brain.
Mm. I think this is good, Al.
I mean, because then it can sort of ride you like a raft as well.
Yeah.
I suppose, I don't know, being in the water for a while, you would just kind of become bloated and you'd probably float, and it can sort of take you across the oceans, visit different
paddling
different
very
lands.
Slowly with its little claws dangling out of your mouth.
Yeah. Something, you know, it just needs to paddle you to one of the currents.
Across the vast distances of the Pacific Ocean.
Mm.
But you're still alive. And this could be the future for all humanity in the end. You know, they might even still, you know, allow us to reproduce by dragging our bodies up against each other and sort of jiggling them next to each other because they need to create new shells. And meanwhile, our minds are still
trapped
in these things.
And you know, I think you know what I think would be the hardest bit? I mean, I think it'd be nice to just to succumb to the boredom and just kind of learn to enjoy it. But I think the hard part would be not being able to close your eye.
You might still be able to close.
And you just have water in your eye for a lot of it?
Yeah.
But I think you'd be fine. I mean,
you'd get used to that.
There'd be, yeah.
Let's be honest. The eyes are probably one of the bits that it would eat out. You know?
Well, I don't know. It might be, you know, maybe it's merciful in that way in that it lets you experience life, you know, through seeing it. It's not a cruel being.
It's also merciful. The merciful hermit crab.
But also, I think maybe also it gets something. Because imagine...
Companionship.
Imagine, you know, you're floating in the ocean and your body sees some predator, right? I mean, you're just seeing it in some blurred, you know, underwater kind of vision. But you're paralyzed, but your body still reacts in a way that the crab, you know, with it, one of its feet that it's sort of, you know, it's in your mouth and it's dug down onto it to get one of its feet that sits on one of your nerves.
Yeah.
It can pick up the signals.
Yeah.
And it goes, there's danger around. And it kind of comes into the mouth a little bit more. Maybe grabs your lip with one of its claws and shuts the mouth.
Doesn't feel. But I think it would also be very good for them. Like the next stage of their evolution would be the ability to stab some kind of nerve in the mouth that makes your legs kick so they can get a little bit of a burst
really
of speed, you know, when they need it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one nerve for each one of their legs so that they can go like that and really get you going. You know, I guess they can maybe tilt your head back and forth. And that will probably determine whether you go up and down in the water.
If this isn't already an episode of Rick and Morty, I'll be very surprised.
Yeah,
it seems like something they do. It's either us or it's them. One of us has got this covered.
Well, I think it could be a great episode of future CSI. I mean, CSI-fi.
You know what? You're absolutely right. Oh, the body is found a long way away from where it obviously fell into the water.
Oh, my God. I'm such an idiot. I don't know why I was writing it like that. It's got to be CSI and then just FI. I was trying to make it look like sci-fi. Like have the SC in there.
Yeah, no, I mean, I understand that as well. Because otherwise it's just CSI fiction. The abbreviation just means CSI fiction, which doesn't actually, it actually loses our unique element of the science nature of it.
Yeah.
So,
and this is pretty sciencey so far. Because it's kind of like, it's like X-Files meets CSI.
Yes.
Meets the future.
Yeah, exactly. Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's on Earth, or at least what you think is Earth.
Well, yeah, that's going to be a big reveal for the last episode of season.
Of the first season.
Correct.
The first season's.
How are we going sketch idea-wise, just out of interest?
Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I mean, you know, like, one of them's a cult. One of them's a, you know, a whole TV series. So I don't know if we've got the sketch ideas. But you know what? I'm willing to move on to our some suggestions from a listener.
Yeah.
Do you know this?
Yeah. You know this? Everyone's talking listeners. About this.
Yeah. Well, it's still happening. And if anything, it's going gangbusters, Andy. More than usual.
That's so exciting. Thank you, everybody who's contributed. Words.
Yeah. People are contributing. Yeah, we're getting some nice messages. We're getting some nice words.
Mm.
You know, sometimes people just send us nice messages.
Oh.
Leave us nice reviews. People just express how they feel. That's nice to hear.
I'm very, very moved by this. Alistair sends me screen grabs of kind things that people say about us, and
in things that he doesn't really have as much access to. Well, you have access to the Patreon, but you don't spend your time. You don't have it on your phone with the app.
No, but you're plugged in.
I'm plugged in, but you know, I guess with how long it takes me to get back to people, people would suspect that neither of us are plugged in.
Plugged
but,
out.
Our three words today come from listener Erling Reinstad.
Thank you so much, Erling Reinstad.
My God. Do you know what Erling Reinstad's name is backwards? Do you want to guess?
No.
Well, it's Datsunar Njilra.
Oh, fuck. you really got me there, Al.
Yeah. Okay, you want to guess his three words?
Yeah. Crank?
No.
Oh.
We'll just try and guess the other two?
Yeah. Lynch?
No.
Okay, pantyhose?
No.
Oh. God damn it.
None three. orienteering?
Yes.
Spectator?
Yes.
Charisma.
Orienteering, spectator, charisma.
Yeah.
Incredible. Well, you know, obviously, I mean, in orienteering, you're given two pieces of objects, right?
Two tools.
You get a map and you get a compass, right? And you navigate your way around the outdoors region. To get to various markers and that sort of thing. But what if the type of magnetism that you were using to navigate was not regular earth magnetism, but the animal magnetism of deeply charismatic and sexy individuals like your George Clooney's? And so with nothing but your own throbbingly tuned libido, you're set loose naked into the woods and you have to navigate by the power of...
So let's say, so you know how you're like, you can make a compass by sort of rubbing a needle, a metal needle on a magnet?
Correct. You rub your penis.
You rub a toothpick, a wooden shaft, right, on a photo of George Clooney.
Yeah, okay.
And then it just starts getting pointed towards sort of... magnetic hot.
Yeah, great.
I don't know.
True. Sexiness.
Or do you think it just goes to, it points towards where George Clooney is, and you sort of go, well, this is his summer home, so he should be here at this time.
Yeah, I mean,
and so
it's almost something, but I've lost interest and faith in this idea already, Alistair. You're doing great things. But
you got to remember that it is the spectator's charisma.
It is, you know, and the way my mind got onto this was originally from the thought that, you know, the compasses of ancient explorers could be diverted by, you know, strange magnetic islands and you know, various local irregularities in the Earth's magnetic field, and that maybe similar things would be a problem if you were distracted by the sexiness of a spectator at your
well, I guess if it just was attracted to hotness and you thought that you were, you know, you thought that the way out of the forest was, you know, towards sort of George Clooney's sort of Spanish villa, you knew that that was northwest and you were like, well, great. But instead it took you to Gulag's house.
Gulag, the
you know, the machinist,
yeah, but
who has an eight pack and just like, you know, like a speed skater's legs,
yeah,
you know.
Oh, you're describing and, exactly and a butthole for miles. He's got one of those long linear buttholes. It's very drawn out.
You know, and
it's a butthole that goes the full length of the butt crack, which
the butt slit.
You wouldn't guess if you were just looking at the butt crack, and you didn't know that there was a single tiny localized butthole inside it. You'd probably assume that the anal opening
comes out in sheets,
a sort of a linear type thing. Right?
Yeah, I wondered if it does that for a reason. Like, is it trying to make animals not know where it is?
Yeah, it could be. You know, they don't know which section of the butt cheek to enter. Like, you've got a fly or a worm or something that's trying to infect you. It could waste a lot of time looking in the wrong section of the fold. That would make more sense if humans were born with the butthole randomly located in that trench. It could be at any point, up or down it.
It must be different from each person.
I suppose it's marginally different, but it's not radically different, not different enough to make this an evolutionary worthwhile.
Yeah, but maybe, you know, maybe every fly is only just born, you know? So for every fly, you know, how many butts... butts are they going to encounter?
Yeah, that's true. But I think, life, you know, it's going to be an arms race like everything. It's an evolutionary arms race where they'll develop an instinct, you know, the ones that guess correctly based on whatever is in there, you know, predetermined by the genetic makeup.
You know, some region of Aladala has a fly that can find a human butthole.
Yeah, correct.
In seconds and lay its larvae in there.
Yeah, at a higher percentage of success. It doesn't need to be a significant difference, but these are the things that on an evolutionary timescale really add up to being a significant advantage for your reproductive ability. So,
now, is this a sketch in any way, Andy?
Sorry. I'm so sorry, Alistair. Everything I've thrown out for this. These are good words as well.
Yeah, these are good words.
Can you run it by me again? Orienteering.
Orienteering.
Yes.
Spectator. Yes. Charisma.
Wow.
Wow.
Look,
have you ever orienteered?
This is nothing right now, but hang on. This is nothing, yes. But you know, in TV shows, angels have wings. But what about an angel that has two shovels?
And it's like an underground angel?
Yeah, it's like an underground angel. Not a devil, not a demon. He doesn't live down in hell. He just lives underground.
No, but digging is really the flying of the dirt world, isn't it? Like,
digging is the flying of the dirt world.
And it's crazy that angels would not have have some sort of ability to travel through the earth. If the air is not an obstacle for them, like, and it does also feel like there would be aquatic angels with like flippers for, you know, like
yeah, there should be water angels and fire angels
of an angel, where they got tiny little wings and they're very good at maneuvering at high speeds to catch...
just say like a penguin angel.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's good.
And they probably have quite a long, flexible neck. And then, yeah, a dirt angel that is kind of like a bit mole-like, probably blind, probably naked, and living in a kind of...
two shovels.
Hive-like.
Do you think it's hands instead of shovels, or do you think it's just sort of hands with big nails?
No, I mean, the angels already have regular hands, and I think they would, you know, regular angels have regular arms, and the wings are actually an addition to that, which is very evolutionarily unlikely and very unusual, to have wings as a separate thing to your arms.
Mm. Yeah.
And so I think the dirt angels would have regular arms, but then also coming out of their back, two shovels. Two regular garden shovels.
Are they kind of like attached to like a scorpion's tail?
I think they
or
would have
or
to
are they
be.
Just kind of
yeah,
sticking?
They'd have to have that flexibility. The shaft or handle of the shovel would have to have a prehensile, almost like rat tail like ability to move and scoop.
I think two rat tails. Look, you can see it's the similar mechanism to the wings.
Yes.
But instead of the bones going out to the side, they kind of go up and over the shoulder, and they hold the shovel, and then they dig for you. Of course, having such a big, wide thing like that is super inconvenient when you're traveling through tiny underground tunnels.
Well, I think they're angels. You know, I mean, what's the alternative? That the top of their head, their halo, spins around and has a tungsten carbide
No, you're
bit,
right. And
then they drill?
And I think their power is that they can make this soil just rich and soft and very tilled, like you can run your fingers through it, you know?
Yeah, so that's their power.
And they enrich in the soul, but then also create little burrows under there in which they live.
I what's the parallel in that? For air angels, because air angels don't do much for air quality, as far as I'm aware. They don't filter pollution out of the atmosphere, unless there's something I've missed.
Well, these angels, they're not here to serve man.
Okay.
You know, air angels are there to come and help people. They're sent by God to help people.
Right.
But these angels are... Firstly, they're independent
sent to help
contractors.
Soil quality. They're not even related to God in any way. Is that what you're telling me?
They're not related to God. They're just part of the sort of
the ecosystem.
Just a split off of the angel species. They haven't been coerced.
Yeah.
They haven't been sort of co-opted by any big deities who's looking for henchmen to do his work. And they just live in the dirt. And they actually take care of the dirt, and they try to make sure that the dirt is nice and aerated, and the trees are good, and plants. It's like they kind of serve Mother Nature. I guess
it feels like what we've invented here
out of
is
the kindness
an earthworm.
Of their heart.
Feels like what we've got here is an earthworm. I mean, it's a complicated
but in human
one.
Form with two big long things.
Wow. Okay. Are they beautiful?
And, you know. Maybe under the dirt, like under all the sort of the grubbiness
layers
that they have. You don't see their face that well.
This is a sketch idea, Alistair. Write it down. Orienteering spectator.
No, it doesn't fit that. Dirt angels.
But it's something that we said after you read out the three words. So I believe technically...
Yeah.
If anyone were to read the fine print of the podcast, of which there is, it's very fine, that print.
Very fine.
It would say that this meets the criterion.
This is something I've thought, Andy, just off pod. And it's not really a funny thought, but it's a good question. In Pokemon, there's no animals. There's just Pokemon. But there's humans.
Really? I didn't
so
know that.
Where did he...
There are no
animals. Pokemon have taken place of the animals.
But is that explicit that they have taken the place of the animals? Like,
No, I just mean in... So this is what's either happened, because then if that's the case, where did humans come from?
Right, how did we evolve?
So,
yes, very good question.
How did we evolve? So either there were animals, Pokemon wiped them out and have replaced them with their own Pokemon ecosystem. But it's so long ago because these Pokemon have evolved a very diverse... I mean, there's over 650. A very diverse ecosystem.
What about...
Of over 650.
Bacteria. Do bacteria exist? Like zoobacteria?
I don't know. I don't know. And I don't know if humans can survive with
them. Or you look down into the gut of the, you know, whatever, Ash. Is his digestion aided by tiny microbial Pokemon?
Yeah. And do they say their own name?
Exactly.
So it's just something to think about. It's either that or humans are the aliens on this planet.
Yep.
Maybe they're aliens.
There must be like a cat or something in Pokemon. Like somebody must have a pet cat. Right? There can't be no animals. I bet there's some. I bet if you watch all of it, you see some.
No,
like
the Pokemon,
a horse or something.
Pokemon are the animals.
Oh, that's...
It's basically you replace animals with Pokemon and then you can sort of, you don't feel so bad about... fighting them sort of in a kind of illegal dog fighting kind of manner.
How is it that that helps you to feel less bad?
Well, because they're not real.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
So if the whole game was get dogs, train them up, and then fight them, do something so your dog can breathe out flames.
No, I think just regular dog fighting.
Just regular dog.
In the Pokemon universe... Pokemon, their version of Pokemon is just dog fighting. And, you know, when you're collecting Pokemon cards or whatever, it's just various different vicious dogs. And
so they're like they play a video game that is just dog
it's
fighting.
It's called dog fighting. Yeah. And, the Switch Pokemon Go is called Dog Fighting Go. How's that?
Dog fighting go, and you just go from place to place, and you find dogs that you can catch, and then you go to
and it's just incredibly vicious and unpleasant. And then you don't catch them in those little balls. You put them in a cage, and then you poke them with a stick until they're angry.
Then you got to carry the cage around with you.
Yeah.
Or drive it in the back of your pickup truck.
Oh, Christ.
You can carry six dogs at once in your pickup truck.
When did you have this horrible idea? You said this was an off-pod idea. When did this horrible thing occur to you?
Well, I didn't have the dog fighting bit, but I did have just that
there are no animals.
Just because my son's been playing a little bit of Pokemon, and so I've been thinking about the Pokemon world and how...
Alistair's got a Nintendo Switch now.
Where did humans come from? I got that for my birthday.
Very exciting.
But mostly everybody else has played it more than me, and I like that idea.
Well, that's nice, too.
We better tell you the sketch ideas for the day.
Oh, yeah.
Astronauts solve most solutions with eating and pooping. So any problem in the thing, this is a great idea from the get-go here.
Very proud of that.
Basically, their bodies are used as garbage disposals to dispose of anything that's kind of... and I guess they have to make everything at least poopable.
That's a good philosophy. Never take anything to space with you that you don't think that you could eat and poop out.
Yeah, exactly. Then you got Future CSI or CSI-Fi, which is, exactly what you heard us say before.
At length.
A CSI show where all the murders or all the deaths are caused by some weird sci-fi idea that... these people have to solve, and it's going to be really hard to solve. But, maybe we can give them clues. It'd be cool to make sci-fi mysteries like that. Then we got part of the brain that causes you to attempt, causes a person to kill themselves, is put on trial, and then thrown in jail.
Yeah, with a wet splat sound when it's thrown into its cell.
Yeah, but then maybe it gets corrupted, because at some point it will get out.
Well, I think
it might come try and find the person.
This is the problem. You're throwing all these criminal sections of brains into the prison system together. They're going to cobble themselves together into one fully criminal brain. And
Andy, We have just found an episode of
CSI-Fi.
Because now you've got a criminal super brain that's going around and killing people.
Yeah.
You've got to find out what all of these people have in common. Now, did they all take their own lives?
They're all dead.
But what? They got rid of that part of the brain.
These murder victims, like, they all have something in common. They are dead.
They're dead, yes. Yes, but something else. And rotting, yes. But a third thing.
His something of a calling card left by the killer is the death of his victims.
Then we've got a cult that explains that suicide is the brain calling you to the front lines on the other side. We might be sort of like a farm for some other worldly creature or purpose that, you know, call upon us by either killing us through some disease or through, you know, us making us want to die. And then they bring us there and they get us to open jars for them or they look at our cute baby face or they do whatever.
Anything that we, anything that we do could turn out to be the thing that this, that a larger civilization is using us to harvest. You know, we don't actually know what the product that we are designed to create is. It could be tweets. You know, there could be an alien civilization that just loves tweets. And our entire evolutionary history has been building up to the point where we're able to produce high-quality, refined tweets for them.
Yeah, like 10 years ago, they went, oh, they've finally started making them.
Yeah.
Great.
Well, it's like apple becomes ripe or a tree begins to fruit.
Yeah, we're just sitting somewhere in a tweet bowl, and they've been waiting for us to... To get ripe. Then we got the hermit crab dragging you around by the mouth, use you as a vehicle. They feast on you, take you around the world through the oceans.
Yeah, you know, if this has already been on an episode, I hope we added something more to it.
Yeah, I don't think this one has. Then we got dirt angels.
Of course.
They're sort of just a side species of regular angels, but they're free agents, but they... Their inclination is to work on the soil and just make the soil better. And I don't know, maybe they breed with each other. I don't know. Or maybe they're eternal.
Dirt angel. And then
we have in Pokemon, the humans play a dog fighting video game.
Exactly.
But for some reason I wrote video getting. Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to Two of the Think Tank. God, it's good that you do that. It is incredible.
Thanks so much for doing it. You son of a good.
I don't know what we can contribute to these guys' already massive existing success. But you should watch the new Auntie Donna show on Netflix. Check it out.
Yes,
it's super funny. It's so good. So exciting.
It's really good.
And fun. And there's so much stuff in there. There's only 6 episodes, but they need a second series. They deserve it. And they're some of the best guys.
Yeah.
It's, real good
they're
people.
They're genuinely real funny. And as somebody who likes sketch stuff, it's very nice to see it done extremely well, and I really laughed very hard.
Me too. God, it's good, and I'm very proud of them.
Yeah, me too. You can find us on Twitter at 2inTank. I'm at AlistairTB.
I'm at Stupid Old Andy.
You can also find us on Instagram at 2inTank. I'm at A. Trombley Birchall. You can review us. You can donate to the Patreon. You can get Magma from SOS Presents.
That's right.
And you can also just sit there and relax and just have a great night.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much.
And
take care to you.
Love.
I love.
You.
You. Ba-do-ba-do-do.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates. It's not optional. You have to do it. We used to go easy on it, but now you have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.